Good morning. We thank you for tuning in to our radio program today. This program is brought to you each Sunday morning by the Parkway Church of Christ. Now, the Parkway Church of Christ meets at the building located at 125 Hilltopper Avenue. Now, we say it that way on purpose. You may hear me make that announcement and wonder, why do they say it that way? Why do they say that the Parkway Church meets at that building? Because a lot of people think that the building is the church. The building is not the church. Church is people. The word ecclesia in the Bible, the word that translates church, or some similar words in the New Testament, translates into an assembly. Word assembly in Acts chapter 19, and there is referring really to a legal assembly. But typically it's used of God's people in the New Testament, and it is a term that refers to people, called out ones. So I want us to be reminded from time to time of the need for us to be careful in how we describe things. Church buildings are not churches, though they're often called that. They're church buildings. They're facilities. They're places where religious people meet. And that's what we do at the building there at Park 125 Hilltopper, the Parkway building. So we want to encourage you to come and meet with us and to get to know us, and we'll have an opportunity to get to know you as well. We would appreciate any questions or concerns you might want to express to us. We'll be happy to answer questions or consider your concerns or direct you to the appropriate passages in the Bible that hopefully will answer your questions. But we do appreciate questions. I always tell people that. Most questions are good. Sometimes people just want to quibble, and we won't take time to do that because there are questions that the Apostle Paul spoke of that merely generate strife. But now, if it is a Bible question where we can direct you to a scriptural response, then we'll be more than happy to consider that. I was talking recently with a preacher friend of mine, and he was talking about some responses he had had to material he had preached on evolution and how derogatory they were, how insulting they were. And, of course, that's characteristic of those often who deny godliness. They deny any godly standard. They deny God, they deny the Bible, and so really what standard do they have? You know, they become just like the people back in the days of the judges when there was no king in the land and every man did what was right in his own eyes. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. I think that's Judges 21 and verse 25. And I think that's also mentioned in Judges 17 and verse 6. If you're taking notes. No ruler, and so everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And that's kind of what happens, and I'm convinced that's why many people hold to the evolutionary theory. That just gives them license. License to live their life free of that Bible, that old Bible and the God of the Bible. They don't like the idea of someone telling them what to do, even if it's Jesus Christ. And that's why they reject Christ as well. They don't want Him telling them what they can and cannot do. And so people want to be able to live with a license to do whatever they are comfortable doing. Now, there is a problem with that approach. It creates people like Adolf Hitler, Mao Zedong. It creates cold-blooded killers. And they just say, well, I'm a human. I'm exercising my power to the extent that I have it. If I want what someone else possesses, I'll just take it. That's sort of their position. That's their guiding principle. You know, last week we talked about, and I was still dealing with some false standards and wanted to talk about thoughts and feelings. That's pretty much what that is. That's why people need to be careful about that position. Paul said, I thought, you remember we talked about Acts chapter 26 and verse 9, Paul said, I thought that I ought to do many things contrary to the name of Jesus of Nazareth, which things I did. So he thought it, And he did it. What was his standard? His standard was himself. He made himself his own standard. And we talked about that last week. So this is the danger with evolution. Evolution says there's no God. Most evolutionists say that. And so there's no standard. There's no absolute standard. And they'll say, society. I always thought this was funny. They'll say, society will figure that out. Well, until society figures out that they can band together and ransack people's houses and, you know, beat people and kill people. And then all of a sudden, society implodes. What is the problem there? Well, they selected the wrong standard. Often in history, this type of thing has led to war. Absolute, full-blown war. And it always will, because some people are going to stand up for the protection of innocent people. And then what's going to happen? Just as the cruel and inhumane people, just as the godless people, have banded together in order for them to be able to develop more power over their supposed enemies, these enemies, these innocent people just trying to work for their livelihood, these people who are just trying to feed their families and trying to protect the innocent, they will also need to band together, right? And it ends up being war. So that's where this all heads, friends, if you let it go down that path. Now, sadly, what has happened with evolution, I had not really planned on talking about evolution today, but I wanted to remind you of the basic concept of evolution, that there was no divine creator, no superhuman being, that is, had powers that are beyond and above those of natural man. They say there's no such being as that, no God, no creator. They say what happened was it's basically an accident. And you start out with the simplest life form, and then as time goes on, and they require a lot of it. You ever wonder why evolutionists always take a position of the Earth being billions of years old, something like 4.5 billion years old? If you ever wonder about that, that's because they need, their construct needs a lot of time. They think that time will allow the evolutionary, and this is all theoretical, the evolutionary process to happen. But they say they need a lot. And they say that, and it's for obvious reasons. You have people that live to be very old, or you have history, and you have historical accounts of various things and descriptions of things. And as far as we know, things have just looked the same way for all of these years. Horses have been horses, cows have been cows. And you say, well, not really. There are some changes within the species, within the kind. God allowed that. God designed us to be able to do that. And we're not talking about that. We're not talking about what some call microevolution, that is, changes within the kind, different hair color of children, different eye color, different body builds and things like that, because of traits that have been handed down genetically for years. We're not talking about that. We're talking about macroevolution, where some one creature changes into something entirely different. And so they say it's going to take, you know, you never see that, they say, because it takes millions of years for it to happen. And that's why they hold that position. Well, sadly, and this is what I wanted to talk about today, sadly, a lot of religious people who claim to be Bible believers try to accommodate the evolutionary thought, the evolutionary process, the theory of evolution. And how are you going to do that with a Bible? Because if you start out and you read along and you read the genealogies in the Bible in Genesis 10 or in Genesis 5 or later in the gospel accounts of Matthew 1, Luke 3, you read these accounts, even allowing for some of the skips that are in some of these genealogies, and you can learn of some of these by piecing other passages together, but even allowing for that, and in fact, even allowing for thousands of years. You know, the traditional old view of the earth and mankind being around, 6 to 7,000 years old. Well, what if you even added 3 or 4,000 to that? You're still at only 10,000, and that's not even close to 4.5 billion. So it's not going to satisfy them. Now, people then feel compelled to take a position that allows the Bible to be much older, time to be much longer on the earth than what the Bible would allow for. And so what do? Well, some people take a view of the creation days that is not biblical. They say that when you're reading in Genesis chapter 1 of the 6 days of creation, and then the seventh day, the day of God's rest, that actually all of those days were eons. They weren't just a day like you and I think of a day of morning and evening. They a cycle of 24-hour, a 24-hour period. They say, no, it's not 24 hours. It's more like 700 million years. Because they're trying to come up with about 4.5 billion total. So they say that each day represents somewhere around 700 million years. And you'll hear different numbers on that. But they say these days are not to be taken literally. They are figurative and symbolic of just some era, some time period. I think that's interesting because you can't believe the rest of the Bible and take that position. Let me show you why. In Exodus chapter 31, for example, verse 15, Moses gave instructions to the Jews regarding, on a very practical level, regarding their work week. He said, 6 days may work be done, but in the seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever doeth any work in the Sabbath day shall be surely put to death. By the way, friends, incidentally, what are you going to do if those who claim to be living under the law of Moses today? What do you do about that passage? What do you do if you drive too far, you travel very far, you prepare a meal, you do work on the Sabbath day? Well, you're supposed to be put to death. And so you might be wondering, well, why are not more people being executed for violating the Sabbath? Well, we'd better not execute people for violating the Sabbath. This law was done away. Jesus nailed it to the cross. Colossians 2 and verse 14. So, but anyway, there is a point to be made there on that. But back to the text, verse 16, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath to observe the Sabbath throughout all their generations for a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever, for in 6 days, now listen carefully, friends, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed. What did we just read there? The Jewish work week, 6 days of work, and then the seventh day of rest, a Sabbath of rest, which is what the word means, was based upon what? The Jewish 7-day, 6-day work week and then 1 day of rest was based upon the week of creation. God worked on 6 days. If you remember Genesis chapter 1, what do you read? Well, verses talking about the creation of light. Verses talking about the creation of the sky that separated water in the sky from water on the earth. A day of the separation of waters on the earth. And plant life, the creation of plant life. And then sea life and air life. And then creeping things and cattle. And then on the sixth day, man. a fifth day. I think I skipped the creation of the sun, the moon, the stars. All those things that contribute to providing light for people on the earth. And then on the seventh day, God rested. What was the pattern for the Jewish seven-day week? 6 days of work and 1 day of rest. The creation week. So what does that tell you about how the word day is used in Genesis chapter 1? It's used of normal days, 24-hour periods, day and night, as we say. One full day. And there were seven of them. Six on which God worked and created, exercised His creative fiat, and the seventh on which He rested. And when I say creative fiat, how did that happen? Did it happen slowly over eons of time? The Bible teaches the opposite of that. The Bible says in Psalm chapter 33 and verse 6, "By the word of the Lord were the heavens made, and the host of them by the breath of His mouth. He gathered the waters of the sea together as a heap. He layeth up the depth in storehouses. Let all the earth fear the Lord. Let all the inhabitants of the world stand in awe of Him." Now, on what basis should we fear God? Why did He say that in verse 8? Verse 9, "For He spoke, and it was done. He commanded, and it stood fast." God spoke these things into existence. It was instantaneous. Now, He spoke things into existence with the ability to recreate seed-bearing fruit trees and other trees we read about there, other plants, other plant life that will perpetuate themselves based upon their genetic design. And the same would be true of all of the other animal forms. All other life, sea life, the fowls of the air life, mankind and other animals, reptiles, all of them were designed to be able to do that. So, and that's talked about, that's discussed there in Genesis chapter 1. But initially, God spoke, and it was done. God spoke, and it happened. So, with each phase of God's implementation of His creative design, He spoke, and it was done. By the way, the position on that says that the days were not literal, real days, but epochs, eons of time, ages, also contains another problem. If you start down that path, then you've separated some of the interdependent functions of these different classes of things from each other. And that happens also if you take the position of the old gap theory, which has gaps between the days. They say, those folks will say, well, the days were literal days, but there were gaps between the days of millions and millions of years. That presents the same problem. That also presents a problem for Exodus 31 in verses 15 through 17 and the parallel to it in Exodus chapter 20. It presents a problem because it would suggest that it wasn't based on a real week. The analogy breaks down between the creation week and the Jewish work week. But the Jewish work week was based upon the creation week. Would that mean that you'd have Monday and then there would be 700 million years between Monday and Tuesday? How would that work? The analogy would break down. There would be no comparison. So that's folly. There are several other passages that we can look at on this. For example, some people take this position and they have the sixth day representing the end of God's creation, and they say that took place over 4 billion years. Okay, so you would have man coming along 4.5 billion years later. in this story, or maybe something less. I've read various things on this, and you read various things because they just make them up. The reality is it's fabrication, so you get to just make up your numbers. But there's an old verse back in Isaiah chapter 45 that talks about God's purpose for making the earth and the universe. It's God states God's purpose regarding to the earth. But it says, "For thus saith the Lord that created the heavens, God himself that formed the earth." Now, of all the things that he made, we're focusing upon the earth. And what does Isaiah say about the earth? By the way, can we just pick and choose what we believe from the book of Isaiah? Can we just choose to believe Isaiah 53 about the suffering servant? I know a lot of religious people who hold that passage to be dear to them. Can we believe that one and read that one regularly and talk about it in sermons, or listen to it be discussed in sermons, and then just ignore a few chapters later and say, well, that can't be true? No, we don't have that liberty to pick and choose which parts of the Bible we want to be real. What did Isaiah say about the earth? Well, it says, "He formed the earth and made it. He has established it. He created it not in vain." Are you listening, friends? God did not create the earth in vain. He formed it to be what? To be inhabited. He formed it to be inhabited. "I am the Lord, there is none else." That ends that verse. God did not form the earth in vain, that is, for no reason. He formed it to be inhabited. Now, if you read Genesis chapter 1, just a sort of, as they say, cursory reading of Genesis 1, you read along there and you read about the creation of light, and then you read about the separation of water on the earth, creation of plant life, and all those things. You just go it through in order day by day. What do you naturally conclude about what happened there? Well, that there was a creation week, 6 days, and that man was created. So the earth was formed in all these preparations. That vegetation had to be there because that's what man was going to eat, according to Genesis chapter 9. He was going to eat plant life. So you read about that, and you read about the design involved in it. You read about the interdependence of the different systems and on the earth and all of that. You would just conclude that it was done in a week. And you would conclude that the earth was made by God to be inhabited. Well, I want you to think about that verse and then think with me about what Jesus said in Mark chapter 10 when he was answering the Pharisees about divorce and remarriage. And they'd ask if it was lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason. And Jesus said, "Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female?" When talking about this, in verse 6 it says in Mark's account, "But from the beginning of the creation God made them male and female." That's interesting that he said, "At the beginning of the creation." There's only one way that Jesus could be right in what he said there. And that is if the creation happened all on consecutive days that were normal days, which put everything at the beginning, not man. And what I mean by that is, if you look at the creation account in Genesis 1, man was made on day 6. If either, the days were themselves 700 million years long, or there were 700 million year gaps between the days, then there's no way that you could say that man was at the beginning, made at the beginning of the creation, right? But Jesus said at the beginning of the creation. But there is a way that makes sense, if you're talking about the creation being the beginning. And that there was very little difference, just a matter of a few days between the creation of light and the creation of mankind, male and female. And that lets the statement made by Jesus make perfect sense. At the beginning of creation, that is, creation was the beginning of everything, and everything else followed. And by the way, if you're, like I said, just do a cursory reading of the Bible, this is what you will conclude. That the creation was just the beginning of everything, and then all of a sudden things are just kind of normal. Very quickly, after the special role that man played, the part of the one of Adam's ribs, the special place it held in the formation of the woman, that's the story in chapter 2. And you see at the end of Genesis chapter 2, the creation of the first home, Adam and Eve. And then they would have children by the time you get to Genesis chapter 4. Things are just kind of moving along. And you read in Genesis chapter 3 about the sin of Adam and Eve and them being cast out of the Garden of Eden. But then the births of Cain and Abel. Then others later. And then you get into chapter 5 and a lot of people are on the earth. So I want you to think about how the Bible does here. It treats the creation as the springboard, something that happened fairly close together, as described in Genesis chapter 1, in a few days. And based upon that narrative and based upon what God did there, then you have the ability for humans to live on the planet Earth, all by God's design. Like I said, some of these systems are very closely connected, very interdependent. Be hard to imagine how you could have hundreds of millions of years between those things. And by the way, friends, the same argument can be made for evolution. People always talk about evolution. You go from this such simple, non-complex life form to highly complex life forms in human beings. And they say, well, it'll happen. If, you know, it could happen if you had plenty of hundreds of millions of years. How do you explain the overlapping, interdependent systems that exist in the human body? This is almost laughable to me. And all I am is I call myself a farm boy sometimes because I grew up on a farm. I'm not the greatest thinker. I'm not the smartest person out there. And yet, I believe I can figure this out. We know how the body works. We know the central nervous system. You can hear news with your ears that's processed in your brain. Thoughts are produced that will make you tremble. Maybe you receive news of a family member being involved in a car crash, but you don't know yet the outcome. It will make you what? You can finish my statement. Sick. People sometimes vomit. They tremble. They shake. Why? These are overlapping, interdependent systems. We think of our circulatory system. We think of when you have a problem with one part of your body, how other parts of the body are affected. It's foolish. It's foolish to think that evolution was ever possible. The body is not made that way. It doesn't work that way. It's working the way God designed it. God designed it. And we read about that in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and through 28. The creation, the formation of man. And then the woman. And the Genesis 2 goes into further detail on explaining how that happened. But that's what you read in your Bible. So we need to appreciate the simplicity of the Scriptures when it comes to the earth, when it comes to creation, when it comes to evolution. People are just simply wrong. Now, we may be being bombarded by information, pushing, I know our children are, pushing the notion of evolution, but it is a false system. It is not true, and it cannot be true. We are out of time today. We thank you for listening. We hope you'll tune in for our study next week. Until then, we bid you a pleasant good day.